champions of order defended the land from the hordes of chaos. Before that, however, it had been the citadel of the enemy, a place of evil and horror. That sinister legacy persisted, soaked into the very foundations. Magda could feel it rising up, rallying to the nightmare conjured by Count Wolfsieg's hate. "This is the chapel," she said as their path drew them to the iron gate. Her step faltered as they approached. Kluger laid his hand on her shoulder. "There's no need for you to enter," he said. Magda looked past him, her eyes focused upon the horrible memories. "No, I have to do this." The witch hunter held her close. "I'm sorry about Ottokar. He was a good man. He died in the way a warrior should die, fighting to protect those he loves." Kluger stared into Magda's eyes. "Every breath, every heartbeat, with it you pay respect to his sacrifice. Your father bought you the rest of your life when he fought the demon." Magda wanted to accept Kluger's consoling words, but they fell hollow in her ears. Ottokar had thought he could save them when he attacked the demon, but the thought was different from the deed. His death had been pointless. The demon endured. Magda didn't need to be told that by some expert of the occult. She could feel it, sense it scratching at the edge of reality like a wolf pawing at a locked door. The lock was weakening. Soon the door would open. "Come on," Magda said. She drew away from Kluger and stepped towards the gate. The witch hunter drew the sword he carried, a slender blade fashioned from silvery metal. Kluger had told her that it had been fashioned in Azerheim from sigmarite, the fabulous metal used by the mighty Stormcast Eternals. It could harm creatures otherwise inured to physical injury, things like demons. "Keep behind me," Kluger said as he stepped past Magda and cautiously entered the chapel. He emphasised his meaning by nodding at the falchion she'd brought with her from the parlour. "Your blade is merely steel." He reached to the holster on his hip and handed her the gold-handled pistol he carried. "If there's something here, use this. The bullets are blessed by the Grand Lector. The charge will hold for 6 shots. Just aim, squeeze the trigger, and pray to Sigmar."
"I'd be more use with a sword," Magda reminded him. She was unfamiliar with pistols, but almost from the cradle she'd learnt how to handle a blade. The witch hunter strode forwards, his gaze sweeping across the dusty pews.
"If there's something here, I know how I'll react to its presence." He turned a pained look on his face. "I mean, I have been trained." Magda just nodded in reply. Kluger did not have to say anything else. There was the threat that the demon might possess her, just as it might possess any of the children. The witch hunter was willing to risk the pistol. He had a second on his belt, but not his sigmarite sword. Magda did not press him further. She didn't want to know if, should she be possessed, Kluger would be able to strike her down. The guests had done nothing to cover the gory scene around the altar. The bodies lay strewn about the bloody pulp that had once been Reiner. Magda stifled a sob when she saw the twisted remains of Ottokar's silver arm. Tears welled up in her eyes when she saw her father's corpse. It was more than a look of horror that was frozen on his face, an expression of agonizing despair. In his last moments, he tried to save her. When death took him, it came with the knowledge that he'd failed. This time, Kluger was oblivious to Magda's distress. Training and instinct took over, and the witch hunter prowled about the carnage like a griffhound. He examined the bodies, the shattered altar. He stood beside the broken sepulchre and studied what was inside. Then, with a visible repugnance, he knelt beside the fleshy mash that had been the demon's host body. He drew a long, silvery pin from a pocket and began to prod the remains.
I prayed that your stories were wrong, Kluger said. I wanted to believe you were all mistaken, that the Count had conjured some lesser fiend to haunt you.
Magda approached the altar. Her eyes kept straying back to Ottokar's body. Whatever he conjured, it has to be killed.
Kluger stood. His face was desolate.
A demon can't be killed, because it's not really alive. It can only be vanquished, sent back to the cursed realm of chaos.
His voice dropped to a grave whisper.
Magda, this thing is more powerful than anything I have seen. Every speck of Reiner's flesh has been corrupted, befouled with the demon's essence. Only a manifestation of obscene power could do such a thing.
A shudder passed through him as he told her the bitter truth he'd been forced to accept.
Magda, I don't know if I can stop this thing.
Magda felt her senses turn cold. The bold, confident witch hunter was now unsure of himself. To hear a man of sincere faith express doubt was somehow more horrible than the fear and despair of all the others. Magda stared at the fleshy pulp. She reached down and withdrew the blade that was partially buried in the gore. Ottokar's sword. Her father's sword. It was why she'd come back to the chapel. She intended to avenge her father.
Maybe we can't stop the demon, she said. But that doesn't mean it takes us without a fight.
Berngar stood with the others as they tried to interrogate the Dwardin. After the witch hunter left, Hartmann had brought up the idea that they shouldn't waste time trying to fight the demon. They should get out of the castle. Abraham supported the idea. The stronger the demon, the harder it was for the fiend to maintain itself away from the realm of chaos. The ancient sorceries that had once dominated Murghast might allow it to manifest in the castle, but outside would be different, or so it was hoped. Of one thing, there was certainty. Remaining inside the castle was waiting for certain death.
An oath is an oath,
Alric snarled. He held the broken leg of a chair in his hands and waved it menacingly at his interrogators.
I'd sooner die than be an oathbreaker.
Be sensible, Abraham advised. It is not your life in jeopardy, but that of your son. Would you sacrifice him because of a promise made to a dead man who planned for both of you to die?
Ulrich glanced over at his son, then sneered at the elf.
If I broke my oath, the shame of it would pass on to Brond and to his children and their children's children.
Don't you feel any responsibility for those people who died in your traps? Berngar demanded.
I saw them, impaled on spikes, cooked alive on those red-hot walls.
The cogsmith shrugged.
I only did what I was paid to do.
Hiltruda began removing her jewellery.
If it's a question of money, I will pay you to show us how to get past.
This isn't the money,
Brond said.
It's our oath. We cannot break it.
Berngar gestured to Bruno.
I would do anything for my father, he said. What about you? You can save your father by telling us how to get past the traps.
Don't let them turn your head,
Alric warned Brond.
I'll not have an oathbreaker for a son. Tell them anything and you're no longer of my blood.
This is idiotic, Roald shouted.
He stormed towards the Dwardin.
You would let all of us die for some bombastic notion of honour?
He glanced around at the other guests.
There are only two of them. I say we rush them and make them tell.
He pointed at Ulrich.
Maybe after I use a hot poker to trim that beard, you'll feel more like talking.
Howling with outrage, Brond rushed Roald. The nobleman retreated before the Dwardin's charge. He fell over the divan and lay sprawled on the floor. Brond stood over him and raised his mattock for a downward swing. Bruno and Berngar hurried to catch hold of the Dwardin, while Roald scrambled away. Brond proved surprisingly strong. He threw them off and glared at the Baron's defenders.
His eyes! By Sigma, look at his eyes! Bruno cried as he backed away. Birnga stared in horror at Brond. The Dwarden's eyes were completely red. A trickle of blood dripped from the corner of each like crimson tears. Brond's rage faltered. Haltingly, he lifted a hand to his face and touched the blood falling down his cheeks. A wail of terror rose from him when he saw the crimson patina on his fingers. He cast aside his mattock and ran out into the hallway.
Brond!
Alric shouted. He started to chase after his son, but only managed a few steps before guests were swarming over him. Hymo threw a chair in the cogsmith's path, sending him to the floor. Thilo and Aberarm pounced on the sprawled Dwarden, pinning him down while Lothar poured a strange liquid onto a blanket. Before Alric could free himself, the alchemist threw the damp blanket over his head. Almost instantly, the cogsmith's efforts to escape lessened. Soon, he was completely insensible.
"We can't let the other one go," Rold shouted in panic. "The demon's inside him. It'll only come back."
"I'll get him," Birnga said. Only after the words left his mouth and he was dashing out into the hallway did it occur to him that he had no idea what he would do even if he caught up to Brond. What could he possibly do with someone who at any moment might turn into a demon and rend his flesh as it had those it butchered in the chapel? Birnga turned when he heard footsteps pounding after him. His father came dashing down the hallway, his sword drawn. There was an intense severity in his expression.
"If we catch up to him, we kill him," Bruno told his son, shocking him with the brutality of his words. "It might be the only way. Kill the host while he's still mortal enough to be killed. Bronn's already as good as dead anyway. If we act fast, maybe we can keep him from killing his own father."
Birnga was still aghast at the plan. "It's monstrous," Bruno agreed.
"Sometimes what needs to be done isn't what we'd like it to be."
The two men could hear Bronn's steps far ahead of them. Terror had lent the Dwarden a shocking fleetness. Or perhaps it was the demon possessing him that made him so quick. Birnga wondered if it might already be too late to stop the fiend.
"He's headed for the courtyard,"
Bruno suddenly realised as they started into the long corridor that led to the castle entrance. Birnga appreciated what motivated Brond.
"He has the same idea we do. He thinks if he can die quick enough, he can dislodge the demon and keep it from going after his father."
"Prey without a hunter," Bruno muttered. "Hunter without prey."
Birnga thought of something else.
"Grand Elector Sigurd. What'll he think if he sees Brond like this? He might be moved to storm the castle and burn everything, everyone inside."
Birnga redoubled his pace, coaxing every last speck of speed he could from his body. He had to catch the Dwarden now. He couldn't let the men in the courtyard see him.
"Birnga!"
Bruno yelled.
"He's turned away! He isn't running for the courtyard anymore!"
He pointed to a side passage. He waited only long enough to be sure his son knew where he was going before he ducked into the corridor. Birnga found there was something familiar about the passage. After the second turn, he knew what it was. This was the way Goswin and the servants had gone to reach the trophy room.
"He's headed for the dungeons!"
Birnga shouted to Bruno. Bruno let his pace slacken.
"Then we're too late."
"We can catch him,"
Birnga assured his father.
"Why did he turn back from the courtyard? I don't think it was because he was afraid of upsetting Sigurd."
He may have decided to use the traps to..."
Bruno shook his head.
"We'll see,"
he said. But there was no confidence in his voice. The two men reached the trophy room without catching sight of Brond. Birnga thought he heard hurried footsteps echoing from the hidden passage. He raced over to the secret door and peered into the dark opening. He could detect the faint noise of someone moving below.
"He's here!"
Birnga called before darting into the stairway. Bruno hurried after him. Birnga emerged from the passage just in time to see Brond finish crossing the first of the trapped corridors.
"We have him now!"
He started for the dungeon, but his father caught hold of him and pulled him back.
It's too late, Bruno said.
I know how to cross the first two rooms. I saw Goswin do it. Bruno gestured to the corridor where one wrong step would see a trespasser impaled on the spikes.
Brond could have killed himself right here. He didn't. That means he didn't come here to destroy himself. He came to hide somewhere. We can't follow. Just like Reiner, the demon needs time to fully claim its host.
Then Baron von Wernher is right, Berger said. We have to make Alric tell us the secrets of the dungeon. Bruno nodded.
Maybe he'll listen now. Maybe now that he sees what has happened to his son, he'll see everything else in a new light.
There was a somber note in Bruno's tone that echoed through the cellar. To Berger, it had all the qualities of a portent of doom. Chapter 7 Roald watched the iron heating in the fire. He wasn't a squeamish man, but he did consider such things to be dirty and sordid, the kind of work he paid people to do for him, not perform on his own. He sent a contemptuous glance at Lothar. Of course the alchemist would have a few of his vile potions among his effects, such as the one that had subdued Ulrich, but he didn't happen to have any of the ingredients for the mixture he claimed could compel anyone to answer questions put to them.
Be sensible, damn you!
Roald spun around and glared at the Dwarden. Alric was bound hand and foot, sitting in the same seat Goswin had sat in hours ago. There was no fear in the cogsmith's gaze, only an insolent defiance that to the Baron felt like a personal affront.
It is foolish of you to stay quiet, Hiltruda said, her tone more diplomatic than Roald's.
She was always like that, always adopting a manner that would make her appear more controlled and commanding than her husband.
Brond has become the demon's new host. That means you are the next victim. Time is short for all of us, but even more so for you.
Hartmann dropped to his knees beside Ulrich.
You've got to tell us how to get past the traps, he implored. None of us are poor. We'll pay you handsomely.
Stop grovelling, Roald snarled. You won't make an impression on him that way. He's already made it clear he doesn't care about money.
He withdrew the iron from the fire. The faint glow around its pronged tip wasn't to his satisfaction, so he thrust it back into the flames. Eberarm paced behind Ulrich's chair, the elf's clothing rippling with an uncanny motion, as though it were woven from oceanic waves.
The Dwarden are renowned for their stubbornness, he said. It will be useless to threaten him, even more to torture him.
I must agree, Thilo said. He walked towards Roald. If we lower ourselves to this kind of thing, what does that make us? Roald's eyes were cold when he answered.
Alive! And that is all that matters right now.
He glanced over at Hiltruda, but the Baroness had nothing to add. Liebgarde was sitting at the far end of the room, putting as much distance between herself and Ulrich as she could. She was always timid, Roald reflected. That was Hiltruda's fault for pampering her too much.
There is the chance the witch hunter could find a way to stop the demon, Lothar suggested. Men in that profession are not without their own abilities.
The only person here Kluger cares about saving is that girl, Roald said.
He turned towards Inga.
Is that not so, Frau Hausler? If not for your daughter, would that man have dared pass through Sigurd's quarantine?
Inga met the Baron's sharp gaze. I often advised her against associating with that man. They're a fearsome breed. I wanted better things for her, a loftier future. But right now, I thank Sigmar for the bond between them. Klugar will do everything he can to protect Magda. She looked across the room at the rest of the guests. Magda is the only one I care about. She pointed at Ulrich.
This barbarous farce makes me wonder if any of you even deserve to live.
Roald smiled at the retort.
There you have it. From the mother's own mouth, all the witch hunter cares about is saving that girl.
He moved back towards the chair and loomed over Ulrich.
You'll talk. I promise you. I'll singe that beard down to stubble. Brand your cheeks down to the jawbone if I have to. You'll talk. Save yourself a lot of pain and just tell us now.
Ulrich merely stared back at Rold, not with anger or fear, but with that same fatalistic insolence. Rold spun around and snatched the iron from the fire. He tested its heat on the rug, searing a long stripe across it. He gestured with its glowing tip at the cogsmith's face.
This against that, Rold warned.
He fought to keep his tone measured, to keep an edge of panic from his voice. For the first time, it had occurred to him that even under torture, Ulrich might stay silent.
Last chance. How do we get through the traps in the dungeon?
Do it already,
Hartmann hissed. The merchant's eyes were frantic, his face glistening with sweat.
Make him tell us how to get away. Force it out of him.
Rold hesitated. He looked aside to Hiltruda. He caught the slight nod she gave him. At least he wouldn't have to worry about her disapproval later. He firmed his grip on the poker and stepped towards the chair. The hot iron slashed down, raking across Ulrich's cheek. The stink of burnt hair rose from the Dwardin. Just like the rug, a blackened stripe ran through the cogsmith's beard. Rold took a step back when Ulrich didn't cry out. He simply stared at the Baron with the same defiant indifference. Rold was prepared for rage or terror, but not this sort of resignation. How could he torture someone who didn't even care about what was happening to him?
Make him talk! Hartmann cried. He has to talk!
Rold raised the iron to strike again. Before he could, the sound of someone running in the corridor outside brought him up short. Except for the captive Ulrich, everyone turned towards the doorway, their hands tightening around whatever weapon they'd found for themselves. Hartmann scrambled back and uttered a sob of horror. Their dread proved unfounded when Birnger came into the parlour. He was flushed from his recent exertions and it took him several moments to recover his breath so that he could speak.
We didn't catch Brond, Birnger finally reported. It looked like he was headed towards the courtyard, that he might use Sigurd's men to kill himself before the demon could take complete control.
Rold clenched his fist in frustration. Now it was going to be even harder to get Ulrich to talk. However, the germ of an idea took shape in his mind, an idea that horrified even him.
You said it looked like he was heading for the courtyard, Hiltruda prompted Birnger.
Birnger shook his head. He turned. We followed him down into the dungeon. We thought maybe he was going to use the traps to stop the demon. But we followed as far as the first room, and there was no sign of his body. We could hear someone moving further on, past where I lost sight of Goswin.
It is the demon, Lothar declared. It knows everything Brond knows, which would include how the traps work and how to get past them. It has used that to hide itself while it completes its transformation.
The alchemist shuddered.
When we next see him, he will be in the same state that Reiner was.
Inga slumped in her chair, seeming to wilt into the seat.
When we see him, he'll be coming to kill his father.
Rold understood her terror. None of them were thinking about the Dwardin. They were all thinking that the same horrible doom threatened all of them.
Right now, the demon will be weak, Lothar said. It is caught between two spheres, two planes of reality. It needs time to pour enough of its essence into Brond to completely manifest. It hides because during this process it is vulnerable.
Abraham was not so certain as the alchemist.
It is reckless to speak in absolutes when dealing with chaos. There are certain rites that open the door for demons, but once that door has been opened, there is no way to be certain how wide the opening is.
The transference is not entirely predictable. The demon might need hours to consume its host in one manifestation. In another, the process might take only a few heartbeats.
Do you know that, or is it mere superstition? Rold asked. Is there a chance to strike this thing or contain it before it does what it's summoned to do?
He looked over at Bunga.
How certain are you that Brond is under the control of this thing already?
I only know that Brond has fled into the dungeons, Bunga said. My father's down there now, waiting to give warning if he sees him or it comes back.
We have a chance, Lothar insisted. If we can kill Brond while the demon has yet to fully possess him, we might be able to break the chain.
Rold scowled at Lothar.
How will we reach Brond? He's safe behind all the traps he and his father built. Unless Ulrich tells us.
I'll tell you none of you anything,
Ulrich said, suddenly breaking his silence.
But I can show you. Cut me loose, and I'll show you how to get past the traps.
Rold gazed down at the cogsmith. He was shocked to see tears on Ulrich's face. He had started to think the Dwardin was as tough as the iron and steel he worked.
Why?
He asked. Ulrich didn't look up at the Baron.
Because we're talking about my son. If there's a chance to kill him before the demon takes hold, I'd see his spirit join our ancestors, not be destroyed by this monster. Let me be damned as an oath-breaker. I accept that shame if it lets me redeem Brond.
Rold nodded as he considered the offer. He wasn't able to gauge Dwardin as easily as he could humans when it came to duplicity, but he thought Ulrich was genuine.
All right, he decided. Hartman, free his legs. His arms stay tied until we reach the dungeon.
While Hartman worked at untying Ulrich's legs, Rold stepped back and replaced the iron in its stand by the fireplace. He was just as happy to have an end to such sordid work.
We aren't all going down there, Inga asked. Someone has to stay here and tell Magda where you've gone.
It would be unwise to put everyone in jeopardy, Lothar said.
He nodded to Abraham.
If the demon has already taken hold of its host, we would be putting all our lives in danger to no good purpose.
Rold thought about that. There was both wisdom and opportunity in what the alchemist said.
Since it is my decision, I will go.
He looked over at Hartman as the merchant helped Ulrich to his feet.
You will go with me, Herr Senf.
The choice was obviously not to his liking.
I'm going with you, Berger stated. My father's down there.
With the cogsmith, that makes four. Five with Bruno, Rold said.
His expression turned grave.
More than enough lives to gamble on this venture.
He looked at Hiltruder, then turned and swept his gaze across the other guests.
The rest of you stay here and wait for the witch hunter.
Rold motioned for Berger and Hartman to lead Ulrich from the room. He was anxious to be gone now. He didn't trust himself to be in the same room as Liebgarde. Not with the ghastly plan that was taking shape in the Baron's mind. Only when they reached the cellar and he saw Bruno standing watch outside the dungeon did Bunga feel even somewhat at ease. He'd been too focused on reaching the parlour and getting the secret of the traps from Ulrich to think of anything else when he'd left his father. On the way back, it was a different matter. He was racked with guilt for leaving Bruno, and afraid of what they might find when they returned.
Has anything happened?
Bunga asked as he emerged from the secret passage. Bruno kept his eyes on the dungeon.
Not so much as a sound. Did the cogsmith say anything?
Bunga stepped aside so that Hartman could help Ulrich into the cellar.
He wouldn't tell us, but he did agree to show us.
Bruno turned around and stared into the Dwardin's eyes. His expression darkened.
I'm sorry we couldn't catch your son, he said.
Ulrich shook his head.
My son is dead already. It's his spirit I'm worried about now. If I can stop the demon,
Maybe Bronn's spirit can join our ancestors.
Baron von Wernhoer entered the cellar after the rest of them. Rold frowned at the Dwarden's words.
We are at something of an impasse, Herr Volkenhorst. The cogsmith won't betray his oath by word, only through deed. He says he will show us how to get past the traps, but he won't tell us how they work.
So someone has to go with him to see how they work, Bruno said. Then he can come back and let everyone know.
Oaths are a strange thing to Dwarden, Hartman muttered. You can cheat them blind in a deal so long as you don't betray a single word of your agreement.
The merchant smiled nervously at Ulrich.
Of course, the reverse is true, too. The Caradhron are quite good at hiding swindles in their oaths.
Ulrich spat on the floor and held his bound arms towards Hartman.
I'll need the rest of the ropes undone if I'm to go further.
Untie him, Rold declared.
When Hartman hesitated, Berger came around and picked at the knotted ropes.
Understand, Ulrich cautioned. I'm only interested in destroying the demon. You can follow, you can watch. But if you make a mistake, it's no concern of mine.
Berger dropped the ropes on the floor and stared at the freed Dwarden.
That'd be stupid, he said. I've seen two of your traps in action. It seems to me if someone following you makes a mistake, that'd be the end for everyone. You'd better tell us what you do to get past them.
Ulrich looked uneasy as he considered the point.
Each secret I betray cuts away at the oath I swore to Count Wulfsieg. It comes hard, even now, to accept that shame.
You waste time, Rold reminded him. We don't know how long it will be before your son becomes like Reiner.
Lead the way, Bruno told the cogsmith. I'll follow you. If we find Brond, maybe I can help.
We can help,
Berger corrected him. This time he wasn't going to leave his father, no matter what he was told. Bruno must have seen the determination on his face. Whatever protest he might have made went unspoken.
I will stay here with Hartman, Rold said. If anything happens, at least we'll be able to get word back to the others.
The merchant giggled in relief. Berger retrieved one of the torches from the wall. He held it towards the trapped room ahead of them.
I've seen how this one works. There are certain tiles that are slightly raised. Step on one of them and a spiked ceiling springs down.
You'll find the others even more interesting,
Ulrich said.
At least, if any of us live to see them.
The Dwarden's sinister words were echoing in Berger's ears as they headed out across the trapped corridor. The task ahead of them was madness itself. Crossing an unknown succession of rooms, each with some fiendish instrument of death waiting within, and their guide resentful of each secret he was forced to divulge. Ahead of them, somewhere in the dreadful maze, was a possessed Dwarden, who even now might be changing into an unstoppable demon.
I think he'll be helpful until we find Brond, Bruno whispered to Berger. After that, watch out. He might decide he can keep his oath if he lures us into a trap.
A chill slithered down Berger's spine. Dead men tell no tales, he said.
Something like that, Bruno agreed. If he does something, be ready to move fast.
Berger couldn't help but look up at the ceiling as they crossed to the little landing at the far side of the room. Up above them were the servants who had fallen foul of the spikes. He stared at the cogsmith's back and wondered about the mind that could imagine such ghastly mechanisms. Heat impressed itself upon Berger when they turned the corner and saw the next room, the narrow hall with the heated walls to either side and the strange copper floor. The servants who had died here were only blackened lumps on the walls now, only vaguely identifiable as anything human. Ulrich turned to the two men.
The floor here is too thin to support any weight. Try to run across it, and it will warp under your feet and toss you against the walls. That happens and you're cooked. Runes of fire.
He nodded to the symbols cut into the walls. I saw Goswin get across, Berga said. He was crawling on hands and knees, but he made it.
There is only one part that is safe,
the cogsmith said. He pointed at the floor.
A beam that runs right down the middle. Stay on it and you won't lose your balance.
And the safest way to do that is to crawl, Bruno concluded. Berger dropped down at the edge of the solid landing and laid his hand on the copper floor. The sides were as thin as Ulrich said, but a span as wide as his hand was solid.
I'll start across, Berger said. Then you can send Ulrich.
He was away before either of them could object. Crawling across the hall was a hellish experience. After only a few feet, Berger's body was drenched in sweat. The heat from the walls was nearly overwhelming. Each breath he drew felt like sucking on fire. The smell of cooked flesh filled his nose, and he could feel charred flakes under his hands as he crossed close to where the servants had died. His mind trembled at the image of people trying to race across, only to lose their balance and be pitched headlong into the red-hot walls. At last, Berger reached the landing where he had last seen Goswin. When he pulled himself up, he waved back at Bruno. His father started Ulrich across. The cogsmith might have designed the trap, but he crossed with the same tedious crawl Berger had used. Somehow, watching the Dwardin creep along was even more unsettling than his own crossing. Berger dreaded watching Bruno when his turn came. Finally, all three of them were safe on the other side. Ulrich held a finger to his lips, then started to remove his boots. Berger and Bruno followed his example, pulling off their shoes. When all of them were unshod, the Dwardin motioned them forwards. Berger stifled a gasp when he saw what had befallen Goswin. The Major Domo's body was lying a few feet inside another narrow corridor. This one was much longer and had iron walls much like the rest of the castles. Try as he might, Berger could find no explanation for the ghastly state Goswin was in. The man had been cut in half. Ulrich looked at each of them again and motioned for silence. The cogsmith didn't step into the hall, but rather slid his bare foot onto the floor. He repeated this and silently shuffled his way towards the landing at the other side. Berger and Bruno followed, copying the Dwardin's curious progress. It was faster going than crawling across the other hallway, but at the same time far more terrible, not knowing where the instrument of death was hidden. Ulrich stopped when he reached the landing. Berger felt sick when he saw the cogsmith glance back at them. It would be very easy for him to set the trap in motion while they were both under its threat. Fortunately, he was more concerned with putting his boots back on.
You can gab all you'd like now,
Ulrich said when the two men joined him.
What's in there? Bruno demanded. What killed Goswin?
The cogsmith chuckled grimly.
It's enough to know how to get past it.
No sound in that room, Berger said. He pointed at his bare feet. Not even so much as a footfall.
Anything louder than a heartbeat would be enough,
Ulrich said.
You'll have a hard time getting that gutless Hartman through there.
The Dwardin seemed oblivious to the irony of the remark.
What now? Berger asked.
Ulrich's face was stern.
I'm going ahead to look for Brond. If you're following me, you'd better get your shoes back on.
Now, hold up,
Bruno called as the Dwardin circled the corner. Berger darted after Ulrich, but not so recklessly as to follow him farther than the landing. He stayed on the little patch of safe ground and hurried to fasten the buckles on his shoes. He could see that the room ahead was wide, but not so long as the others had been. There was a strange sheen to the floor, a kind of gloss that reflected the torchlight. The ground looked firm enough as the cogsmith crossed it.
So that's how he's going to play it,
Bruno said as he joined Berger.
Show us how to get past the traps, but not tell us what they are.
Berger had his shoes back on and stepped out onto the floor.
If we follow exactly behind him,
His words failed when he saw the change in Bruno's face. His expression had changed from irritation to a look of terror. Birnger noticed the charnel reek that drifted through the dungeon. The same gory stench that had surrounded the demon's earlier manifestation. The sound of raw, wet footfalls echoed in his ears. Birnger turned and looked across towards the other side of the room. Instantly, he felt his blood turn cold. Standing on the opposite landing was the bloody, skeletal demon. It had completed its domination of Bronn's body and moulded his flesh into this horrifying aspect. The Mardag made no sound as it tilted its skull-like head, but there was a ravenous fire in its sunken eyes.
"Back! Get back! Through the last room!"
Alric scrambled towards them. As he retreated, the demon stepped down from the landing. The ragged flesh on its elongated foot sizzled and smoked as it touched the glossy floor, but it didn't faze the monster. Ulrich became even more panicked when he saw that the creature appeared unharmed.
"Crystallized acid," the Duardin said as he climbed back onto the landing. "The entire floor's coated in it."
"Well, it isn't stopping the thing," Bruno shouted.
Ulrich gave him a dark look.
"Then I'll find something that will."
He hurriedly pulled off his boots and prodded the two men back towards the last chamber. Birnger felt his heart racing when he moved out into the silent corridor. He recalled what Ulrich had claimed, how sound was the trigger for this trap. Anything louder than a heartbeat. What about a heart that was hammering inside his chest like an auric war drum? Bruno was already halfway across, shuffling his feet as rapidly as he dared. Birnger followed after his father. He imagined they must look absurd, shoes clenched in their hands, their bare feet sliding along the floor. He struggled to repress the laugh that threatened to crack the silence. He was losing control, letting the panic overwhelm him. He focused on Bruno, fixated on the fact that if he did lose control, he would be killing his father too. When he reached the landing, Bruno dropped his shoes and turned back to Birnger. He waved his son onwards, desperation on his face. Birnger restrained the impulse to look back and see the thing that had provoked such terror. He kept moving, his entire perspective limited to just the landing and the end of the silent hall. At the landing, Bruno wrapped his arms around his son. Both men then focused their attention back on the room they had escaped. Ulrich had stopped midway. The cogsmith was watching the other side of the hall. Approaching him, the sound of its scorched footfalls falling to activate the trap was the Mardag. Birnger noticed now the tattered strips of cloth that hung from the demon, all that remained of Bronn's clothes. The gangly monster reached out with one of its long arms and it drew nearer to Ulrich. The Duardin stood his ground before the demon. Birnger could not see Ulrich's face, for he had his back to the two men, so he could not be certain what the cogsmith's intention was when he raised his arms and brought his hands together in a loud clap. Immediately after the sound, there was the rumble of machinery set in motion. From the roof, a great knife came scything down. Fastened to a long iron armature, it swept across the hall like a murderous pendulum. Birnger saw now the manner in which Goswin had died. The blade struck Ulrich, slashing through him like a cleaver through a piece of mutton. The Duardin was split from scalp to groin, his bisected halves flopping obscenely to either side. The crescent-shaped knife continued its butchering swing and slashed into the demon's monstrous body. The wet, glistening bones and crimson flesh were ripped asunder, cleft apart by the pendulum. The size of the demon made the cut more jagged than it had been for its other victims, and the skull-like head was whole when the creature collapsed to the floor. Birnger could see its ravenous eyes fixed on Ulrich's body. Even with such a mutilating wound, the fiendish vitality endured for a moment. Then the same rapid disintegration that had consumed Reiner's possessed vigour settled across what had been Bronn.
"He killed it!" Birnger shouted.
Bruno shook his head.
"It didn't have a prey to hunt, so it left to find another host.
and another victim. Climbing down the secret passage from the trophy room, Magda could hear Rold's voice rising from below.
"Then we are in agreement," the Baron said, followed by a muttered reply from Hartman that she couldn't catch.
"You understand what you have to do?" Rold asked.
Magda motioned for Kluger to hang back so that they might eavesdrop on the Baron. Whatever the nobleman was up to, she was certain it wasn't anything intended to benefit anyone else. In the dark, however, Kluger missed her cue and continued on into the cellar. The moment Rold saw him, the previous conversation was set aside.
"Ah, so here you are," Rold said. "We've been waiting here for the others, keeping watch."
He gave a sideways glance at Hartman. The fat merchant nodded and confirmed the Baron's statement.
"We were told everything that happened," Kluger said.
He shifted his gaze from Rold to the trapped room beyond the cellar.
"How long have they been gone?"
Rold didn't have a precise answer to that question.
"It seems like a great deal of time, but not even close to how long it took for Reiner to completely change."
"There's no knowing how long it took for Reiner to change," Magda said. "We don't know how long the demon waited in the sepulchre for Notka to arrive in the chapel."
"The elf Eberarm may be right in another respect," Kluger added. "The demon may not take as long to manifest each time. It's certainly a demon of corn, and as such it will be invigorated by bloodshed. The more violent death that occurs inside Murghast, the more firm its presence in Chamon will become. Each possession will come easier than the last, each manifestation faster than the one that preceded it."
"Then it may already be too late for them to stop the demon," Magda asked.
Kluger paused. Magda could tell he was trying to find a way to soften what he would say.
"Even if they destroy the host, they can't destroy the demon. It will simply find another vessel for its evil."
Magda felt the pommel of Ottokar's sword against her palm. She thought of Bruno and how his treachery had maimed Ottokar. Though she knew it was foolish and selfish, she was worried that the demon would cheat the Free Guild captain from a long overdue reckoning.
"Is there no hope then?" Hartman moaned. "Even if they destroy the demon's body?"
"Perhaps a slight one," Kluger said. "But it's best to wait and learn."
He checked the charge on his pistol and faced the dungeon. Magda aimed the weapon Kluger had given her. Even when Bruno and Berger appeared at the far end of the corridor, she kept the pistol trained on Bruno. It would be so easy to pull the trigger and send a bullet smashing into his arm the same way his assassin had struck down her father. She resisted the urge. Another time, another place, she told herself. She would not hesitate. Grudgingly, she lowered the pistol as the Vulcanhorsts hurried towards the cellar.
"We were too late," Berger gasped as he joined them. "The demon was already manifest in Brond. It came after Alric."
"Did it get him?" Hartman asked.
Bruno shook his head.
"No. The cogsmith lured it into one of the traps. He used himself as bait to draw it in. A big knife that swung down from the ceiling. It cut clean through Ulric and then on into the demon."
"That stopped it, though," Rold laughed, though there was a suggestion of nervousness in the sound. "Otherwise you wouldn't have made it back."
"I'm not sure," Berger confessed. "When it fell, the demon started to dissolve. It melted, the same way it did in the chapel after it killed Notka."
Magda found that she couldn't take her eyes off Bruno. Though she lowered the pistol, she kept a ready grip on her father's sword.
"What did you do?" she demanded. "Did you try to help or did you just watch?"
"We couldn't help," Bruno said. "The slightest sound would have been enough to trigger the knife. All we could have done would be to die with him."
"The traps! Before he died, Ulric showed you how to get past the traps."
Rold had lost whatever reserve he still had. Berger answered the Baron. "We learned the secret to getting through the four rooms Ulric took us through. He didn't say if there were more. When he reached the fourth room, we met it."
"It makes no difference," Kluger said. No one is leaving this castle, not until it's stopped.
There was sorrow in his eyes when he looked at Magda.
In Murghast, the fiend is contained. If it were to get loose in Ravensback, the havoc it could wreak would be incalculable.
I think Brond intended to save his father by killing himself before the demon could manifest, Berger told the witch hunter. Magda was still watching Bruno.
Maybe the reverse would be true. Without a victim to hunt, the demon would not be drawn to the host Count Wulfsieg picked for it.
Either's possible, Kluger said. The ritual the Count performed appears complex. Occult links binding sequences together. Break one link and the sequence falters.
A strange look came upon Bruno. Magda saw a weird light leap into his eyes. She saw his jaw tighten. Before she knew what was happening, he turned around and darted into the dungeon. Berger was slow to understand, but when he did, his shout echoed through the cellar.
No!
Stay there,
Bruno warned. His eyes swept across all of them.
Keep my son safe. He's the only one who knows how to get past the traps now.
Magda grabbed Berger before he could rush into the dungeon. She struggled to hold him back. Before he could break free, Kluger was helping her. Then Rold joined in and the struggling youth was borne to the floor.
Don't! Berger howled. Stop him! Stop him!
Magda could see a kind of regretful pride in Bruno's face as he looked at his son one last time.
I'm breaking the chain, Bruno said.
Then he stamped his foot down. Chapter 8 Magda slid her hands across the hilt of Ottokar's sword, savouring the feel of the rough grip against her palms. It was a link between daughter and father, a reminder of who he had been. In her ears, she could hear his voice, only slightly slurred by drink, encouraging her to greater discipline in her swordsmanship. Pain flashed through her, pulsating from her heart down into her very toes. The sense of loss was almost overwhelming. Unlike Inga, she'd never stopped loving Ottokar. She wondered if that meant the pain she was feeling now would never go away. Across the parlour, the others were talking. It was happenstance, but she found her gaze focused on Berger. She could see the hurt he was suffering. It was etched on every line of his face. His anguish was only too familiar. He'd lost his father right before his eyes, helpless to act, but at the same time blaming himself for not doing something to stop it. Magda felt ashamed that she couldn't muster any regret over Bruno's death. There should be something, but there wasn't. She didn't repent the hate she'd felt for the man. She wondered, though, if she would have felt any satisfaction if it had been her sword rather than the dungeon's trap that had put an end to Bruno, because as things stood, there was only emptiness. The Dwardin are gone, Kluger stated as he paced before the guests. If there was any question about the horrible rite Count Wulfsieg performed, there's none now. The Mardag has been called up from the Blood God's infernal kingdom. It will infest those who ate the profane food and drew into themselves the mark of Khorne. Then it will use these hosts to murder their parents. It was a mark of the witch hunter's agitation that he didn't shun the use of the profane names, as though by speaking them he could defy the power of the beings they represented. Magda saw the fear that shone in the eyes of the older guests. They cast anxious looks at their own children, horrified by their presence. Even Saskia Krebs stirred from her dreamy indifference to stare at her son, Thilo, as though he were some venomous reptile. Magda felt her heart sag when she saw the same fear in Inga's face. Her mother tried to muster a reassuring smile, but it looked devoid of emotion. A mask adopted to hide her inner dread.
There is more, Lothar told Kluger. Something perhaps none here have considered.
The alchemist pointed to Abraham.
Your mother, did she love you?
The elf slowly nodded. Lothar turned to Birnger.
And there can be no mistaking the intention of your father when he died.
What are you saying? Hiltruda demanded. She pulled her hand away when Rold tried to grasp it. What are you saying, you filthy poisoner? Lothar shrugged at the insult.
You should thank me for that poison, as you call it. Perhaps you would already be dead if you had more children for the demon to choose from. More tickets in this lottery of death we have all been condemned to.
Abraham rose from his chair and regarded Lothar with an icy stare. Why did you ask how Nashala felt about me? Because he thinks it was more than arrogance that made her walk out into the courtyard, Magda suggested. He thinks she deliberately provoked them into killing her.
That's horrible, Inga cried out. It's absurd,
Hiltruda scoffed. Lothar shook his head. He turned towards Kluger.
What do you think? Horrible, I agree, but absurd, I do not. There was purpose in these deaths, not simple self-destruction, but self-sacrifice.
The demon would spare a potential host if there was no victim associated with them, Kluger said.
Magda slid across the divan and grabbed hold of her mother. She felt Inga tremble in her grasp. They locked eyes. She wondered if her own gaze held the same expression of horror that she saw in Inga's. All she could do was hold on to her and shake her head, desperate to keep the thought from her mother. She remembered what her parents had said, that they would do anything to protect her.
Monstrous,
Hiltruda said, her voice choked as she blurted the word. Rold echoed her sentiment, if not her tone.
Is there logic behind this vile speculation, or is it simply depraved imagination?
He directed a sideways glance at Hartman, a stern look that the merchant couldn't hold.
Magic obeys certain laws in order to manifest in the mortal realms, Lothar said. Even the blackest sorcery drawn from the realm of chaos must be subject to rituals and incantations. Limitations that confine and focus its dark energies. Conjuring the demon has shaped etheric chains to sustain its presence. One of those chains is Murghast. The castle itself is a boundary for the demon. Another is the vindictive bonds described by the Count when he summoned the fiend. It possesses a host and then hunts a victim. These two are chains.
And if the chain is broken, Birnger said, if the father dies, then the son is spared? Magda could hear the guilt in his voice. Kluger rapped his fist against the wall in a gesture of frustration. There was fury in his eyes when he answered.
I don't know, he admitted. I don't know if Bruno, and possibly the elf as well, died for a noble purpose or a useless. I just don't know. This demon's unlike anything I have encountered before.
But if the link between parent and child is broken, Rold said, then won't that confound the fiend's ability to manifest? It will, Lothar declared. But I do not know to what degree. It may simply mean that once the demon has killed all of its designated victims, it will still possess those who are left behind.
He bowed apologetically to Abraham.
It could simply mean that instead of escape, you get put at the back of the line.
Magda gave a start when Hartman suddenly lunged to his feet. The merchant moaned in horror. He waved his hands in the air and cried out to the other guests.
What good does it do to sit here and babble on and on?
Hartman wailed. He swung around and pointed his trembling hand at Herlinda and Haimo.
The demon's looking for a new host. Any moment now it could take over one of our children, just as it did Bronze.
He glanced back at Kluger.
You're supposed to know how to protect people against this evil. Why aren't you doing something?
Herr Synth, that is enough, Hiltruda barked.
Hartmann shuddered under the authority of the Baroness and retreated back into his chair. Kluger looked across the parlour. His eyes lingered on Magda. She could tell that he had reached some sort of a decision, but when he gazed at her, he hesitated. Whatever he had in mind, Magda was prepared to trust him. She gave